Thank you, Steve. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Bill and a 20. It's Thursday. We're thrilled that you're listening. Today's show should be pretty good. There's some serious things on today's show, Wendy.
I was thinking about that. We are going to learn a lot on today's show. The government shutdown, how does it affect us in our internet safety and lack of hacking? So we're going to talk to the ethical hacker, Jason Glassberg. We're going to talk to Tim Ryan, who is helping people, so many people, with their opioid addiction.
He's a frequent guest on the show, and every time he's on and he goes out of his way, he thanks us, which is unnecessary, but they always end up saving a lot more people. People hear about different options they have if a loved one is involved with heroin, and yeah, it's a very important segment that we whenever we bring him on.
And then, of course, Dean Richards will help us decide what movies to see.
Right.
So see, we're helping people today.
That's what it is.
People helping people.
That's what it is. We're carrying out a rich tradition here at WGN of people helping people. Did you by any chance see the video of Meghan Markle of England being called a fat lady?
No.
It's very
Who's
unpleasant.
Calling her fat?
A woman at an animal shelter. Here's the story. Well, let me just tell you about it. And I was going to play the audio, but you really can't decipher in the audio what is being said. But part of her duties are to just tour various places in and around England. And she does, I think she does a great job of it. She always seems very amiable. Everybody comes up to her. They love her. They say good things about her. And now, because she's pregnant, that often comes up in conversation. So there was a woman there who complimented her, a woman from Jamaica. Her name is Peggy McEachram. She said, "What a lovely lady you are. May God bless you." And she Meghan Markle
sounded thanked her. All good.
Everything's good. And then she added, "And you're a fat lady," as she pointed to Meghan Markle's stomach.
I think that was a joke. Because if you look at her arms and her face and her limbs, she's not. She's pregnant.
She's, yeah, right. You know how here they say, and I know this for everyone, I think everyone's had an incident like this at some point in your life where you congratulate somebody.
Oh, no, you don't.
Usually, well, no, now I've learned.
That's the first thing I taught my boys.
Oh, never. Don't even take a gamble. Unless you see a baby emerging from that person, do not congratulate them.
And even then.
Even then. Right. Check your sources.
I didn't even know you were pregnant. It's better to say that.
I have twice in my life congratulated women for being pregnant who were not pregnant.
Billy.
Oh, never again.
Excuse me, but how did the second time happen? Because you think the first time would have been bad enough. What, it takes you two times to learn?
That's funny, he says never again, but there was an again there, apparently.
I remember the second time way better than the first time.
You asked me yesterday.
I ask every day. Because at some point, I'm going to hit the jackpot. It's like playing the same lottery ticket over and
right,
over and over.
You're right.
The numbers are going to pay off eventually. Right? I was managing a video store, and a frequent customer came in, and I said, "Hey, congratulations."
Oh, my God.
Like, with my hands gesturing toward her midsection. And she goes, "For what?" And I just gave her that sly smile, like,
for
you know.
In.
Well, I said, "For returning your movies on time." But she, by that point, she knew, you know, I had said too much. But what would this lady be thinking? She said it in a very jovial manner, big smile on her face, "And you're a fat lady."
That's
no
a
one
joke.
Wants to hear that.
Yeah, but it was a joke.
But is Meghan Markle somebody that you can just freely joke with? Like, if it's somebody you know really well, you can mess with them a little bit. But she's kind of high ranking there in the UK.
I guess.
She handled it well.
The woman's also Jamaican. I
right.
I don't know if there's a difference, you know.
Is oh, you just mean culturally, if you can... I would think almost anywhere on the planet, if you say to a woman that you're fat, that's not going to win you many points.
There was a time in the 90s when fat was cool, right?
P-H-A-T.
Yeah.
Oh.
P-H-A-T.
Maybe that's what she meant.
Yeah. You're fat, too. And everybody just starts dancing. That's how it should be. What did Meghan Markle say to this? She just smiled and said, "I'll take that," and everybody laughed.
That's good. She's good.
How would that play here in the United States if somebody higher up was at an event and somebody just said, "Oh, by the way, you're fat"? That wouldn't play well today, would it?
If you were pregnant.
Is that better or worse if you're pregnant?
Well, it's better at that point, because then you're like, "Well, I'm not fat. I have
a baby.
There's a baby
in here." Right.
I mean,
you know, this woman also told Meghan Markle that she's going to have a boy.
Based on?
Well, I think
position
it's just,
of the bump.
Yeah. Oh.
God, I hate baby bump. Why did I go there? I hate that. Ew!
You sounded very E-channel, E-network. That's what they would say on E. Steve Kometko would come on and say that somebody's baby bump was showing. Remember? That was a thing.
You know, yesterday I was listening to the John Williams show. We wanted to talk about the Gillette commercial, and we weren't able to because you said it was in...
There was a court order.
And it was in a promo.
Right.
But I just want to jump in with one thing.
Sure.
I did tell my boys never ask somebody if they're pregnant.
Right.
And then I heard Steve yesterday, if you haven't seen the Gillette commercial, where have you been? Because it's been out there for a while. Take a look at it and see what you think. And Steve said something to me peculiar on our show yesterday.
Our Steve? What did he say?
When I said that I kind of like that commercial and I don't see a problem with it, you said, I'm surprised you, the mother of boys, would like that.
Well, you're very defensive of your boys. You have in other issues.
And I still am.
Yeah.
But,
so this is just, this is like a 24-hour-old reaction to that?
Well, no, because I heard you say yesterday on the air, you know, who teaches their kids to fight? And I never taught my boys to fight, and they're not fighters. But
there are a lot of people who do teach their kids. They'll say it's self-defense. They'll teach my son or my daughter self-defense.
I did tell them when they were entering elementary school, I said, there are some jerky kids out there. And I said, do whatever you can not to get in a fight.
Right.
But if someone hits you,
right,
you have the right to defend yourself. Although, let it be known, you're going to get in trouble, too, and go to the principal's office.
Yeah. Well, see, but Gillette didn't do a commercial to those many moms who teach their boys to fight.
I didn't teach them. I just...
Well, okay, but, you know.
But you got to defend yourself, or you'll be picked on your whole time at elementary school.
And sometimes later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, but in a way, you're proving a different point, that women do it, too, then. Right? I mean, this was accusing men of doing this, and you're saying as a mom, you did it as well.
Well, one of the...
I did not. I never taught my or encouraged my kids to fight.
I didn't encourage it. I said if somebody hits you...
Hit them back.
You have a right to defend yourself. I put it just like that, but know that you're going to get sent to the principal's office as well. And neither of them fight.
Steve, you have a son. Did you teach him how to defend
knit.
Himself?
I taught him to knit.
To knit?
Right.
That's curious.
Can you imagine me teaching anyone how to defend themselves? I don't know how to defend my own self. No, I never taught him anything like that.
I didn't teach them. I just said that to them. I don't know how to fight.
Right.
Now you're defensive. Was there a Gillette commercial aimed at you, too?
No, but you were defensive, too, because at the end it's like there are some good men and some know this message and some don't. If you are someone that knows that message, you shouldn't be defensive about it. I think most men know... A lot of those things are incorrect.
They never said in the commercial most men.
They said some
men.
And
right. Yeah, and the implication was that most don't. That's what I didn't like about it. I also thought I'm pro message. I just thought the message was conveyed badly. It was amateurish.
You're not the only one who feels that way. Yeah. Other people have said
similar
things.
But you were cool with it, weren't you?
Yes, I thought it was very inspirational.
I thought so, too.
I really did. I can see where people would have a hard time with it. It does pigeonhole men a certain way. But I'll be honest, the men that they were pigeonholing also
were those
exist.
Kind of men.
Yeah, there's guys like that. And I think that was what Gillette's goal was, to try to call attention to that times are changing and we need to change along with them.
The sequel will feature Steve Bertrand laying down a coat for a woman to walk over his coat with a puddle.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
That'll be fun to see. All right, let's take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show. You want to jump in? We'd love to hear from you. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WG. Hey,
it's Bill. It's Wendy. Right. It's WGN Radio. Briefly, we were talking about the Gillette ad.
Yeah.
That basically is trying to teach men can't be like that anymore.
Right. The times are a-changing.
Thank you, Bob Dylan.
You're welcome. So as long as we're dissecting television ads, there's one or two that are on my mind that I can't figure out. Number one, Lincoln, the car. So if you know you have Lincoln cars in an ad, you also have Matthew McConaughey. That's a given, right?
They go together.
So Matthew McConaughey is at a party at some rich person's house. It's a really nice house. It's a stunning house. And in scene one, he's sitting at a table telling a story, and the rest of the people are on his every word. He's just owning that room. They love him. They love Matthew McConaughey. He's telling a story. I can't make out what the story is about, but the people who are sitting at the table love it. Then he leaves the room and he goes into the next room to shoot pool by himself, and they're spying on him for some reason. I don't know what's happened to make them want to spy on him, but they're being very quiet, very spy-like, and they're watching him, and he does this weird shot. I've been watching people play billiards my whole life. He does the shot where he holds the pool cue vertically, and he taps the ball, and then the ball spins around the other ball, and then he leaves the party.
Show off.
But I don't know, like, will that make me say, I have got to get myself a Lincoln?
That would make me want to play pool.
But then people will spy on you.
I'm okay with
that. I don't know why they're spying on him.
That is weird.
Just go and watch him play pool. He's Matthew McConaughey. That's not the weirdest thing that's going to happen to him today.
You know what those commercials make me do?
What?
Turn the volume down.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I see him. I'm fast forwarding.
I don't ever want to hear him talk again on a commercial, ever.
What's his tagline? All right.
Yeah, he says that all the time.
Does he say that after he hits the cue ball?
I'm just
going
to go in the other room and play pool by myself, and you can spy on me if you want. I have no idea what's going on in that commercial.
Is it
going
to make you buy a Lincoln?
Probably not.
Why
probably
don't they
not.
Ever put Abe Lincoln in a Lincoln commercial?
That would be a selling point.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like
we cannot tell a lie. This is the best
part. Right.
All right, so the other one is, for something having to do with your telephone, where there's guys in different color outfits, matching shirts and pants, they're traveling in groups depending on what their colored outfit is. There's an orange group, a blue group, a green group, a purple group, a yellow group, and they're just running around town, jumping off of things.
I don't know.
And
if
then
I've
at the end,
that.
they show you a phone. I guess phones are in color now because they want to sell the fact that there's a lot of different colors on this phone.
Is it the color of the shell of the phone?
I think what they're trying to tell you is that the colors will be more vibrant when you use this particular phone.
What phone was it? Didn't work, did
Lincoln.
It?
Lincoln. I don't know. But now that one I really enjoy because it's got a peppy song.
And
there's
colors.
A song going on. It's very vibrant. So that has my attention. I don't know who these guys are and why they've overtaken the city and why the colors can't unite. I guess that's what they're going for is all colors are equal, which is great. I'm all for that.
I like that message.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Super Bowl now. You have whet my appetite.
Oh, both of these have the flavor of Super Bowl commercials. They're both big productions. But normally when a commercial's over, I don't always remember the product, but I know what their intent was. I know what they were trying to tell me. But in both of these cases, when they're done, I just stare straight ahead. I'm like, show that again, because I don't know what I just saw.
It's pretty wild.
It's a song called Come Along. It's a very peppy song. You've never seen this? There's guys some of the guys are in a truck opens up and guys of one color run out of a truck. And then there's an on-ramp to the city and there's guys just running down the on-ramp. Some of the guys are jumping over it to get onto the street faster. There's a lot of movement and a lot of color. But when it's all said and done, I just go, I don't know what I'm supposed to do now. What should I be buying?
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that.
It's on all the time.
What channels do you watch?
UHF. Strictly UHF.
Yeah, I haven't seen
those
that
those are just
one.
Good and plenties you've been taking, right?
Yes. Yes. Huh. Steve, do you know that ad? Have you ever seen that? You've never seen it either?
Guys of different colors jumping out of cars.
The guys are all...
outfits.
The guys' outfits are... there's an orange... You name the color, and they're represented there. And they're all running together, but they're
purple?
Not going to... yeah, there's purple, Wendy. Yeah. Why did you ask that one particular
color?
Because
you said every color,
yeah,
and I didn't know if
that's
it was
a color.
Just primary colors.
No, some secondary. There's orange, too. Something for everybody.
All right, well, I have to look for that, and we'll figure that out.
All right.
312-981-7200. You might want to write that number down, because we are going to talk to Tim Ryan. He is with a Man in Recovery Foundation, and so many people have problems with heroin. So many parents out there feel ashamed. They feel, not my son, not my daughter. You have to lose that shame. Tim is here to help you. If you have questions, 312-981-7200. He will be coming up after the news.
He's extremely honest about this. This has affected his life more than anybody else I know. So
he lost his son.
Yeah. Horrible, horrible, horrible story. But
and former addict himself,
yeah.
Went to prison.
I mean,
really.
Yeah.
Tim Ryan is here to help, and we will talk to him after the news here on 720 WGN. Thank you so much, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and a regular guest on our show who should probably come up even more often, Tim Ryan from Dope to Hope, a man in recovery foundation. You have helped so many people beat their heroin addiction.
It's not just heroin. It's alcohol. It's benzodiazepines. It's pain pills. You know, I work with anyone, but yes, predominantly opiates and heroin has been the number one killer out there.
A statistic that has came up on my phone as an alert: Americans today are more likely to die from an opioid overdose than a car accident. True or false?
True. 100%. More people will die from opiate overdoses than gunshots and car accidents combined. And we have a pandemic going on, and people still have their heads in the sand.
So how did it get so bad so quickly, Tim?
Big Pharma had a lot to do with it. The JCO accreditation, you know, going to the hospital and the smiley face, oh, my pain level's 10. Oh, you can't leave in pain. Unbeknownst what this unleashed. And, you know, it's a travesty now. I could walk outside of your office here, and I'll buy heroin within a three-block radius here.
Right,
it's everywhere.
So you don't have to go to bad neighborhoods to get heroin?
They'll deliver it to your house. I can order it off the internet and have it shipped right to my house.
What?
Yeah.
Would you equate this with the tobacco companies years ago knew what they were selling? They were selling death, and they knew it. And then we finally figured it out, and we held them to the task on that. Will that be what's happening with other pharmaceutical companies?
Yeah, there was actually an article that came out yesterday or the day before on the family that started Purdue Pharma, and how their tactics were to, you know,
hook you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's a travesty, and we need to hold these pharmaceutical companies accountable and the doctors accountable. And the sad fact is a lot of doctors don't even understand what they're prescribing. You know, a doctor goes through medical school, and I think they take, you know, 6 hours of addiction training, and that's it, you know.
I know people that have had addictions that won't do pain pills. I feel the doctor should not even, a lot of times the doctor will prescribe it and the patient will go, no,
and
I
can't. And they'll still give it to
right.
you.
Right. That's unacceptable.
It's absolutely unacceptable.
You brought someone with you.
Yeah. Rich Wostocki, former Naperville detective, SWAT sniper, cybercrimes expert, Mackenzie's godfather, one of my best
Your
friends
daughter.
In the world. Yeah. And Rich and I had met when I was recently out of prison, and he did a program with another officer, Officer Sean Ferguson, called Dare to Know. Dare to Know what your kids are up to. And I called him and I said, I want to meet with you. And
Tim, I can't meet with a heroin addict who's on parole. It's against my general orders, and there's no way I'm going to have anything to do with you, because the only thing I know about addicts, that there are manipulators, drug addicts,
liars,
stealers, cheats, and liars.
So you thought that he was trying to get something out of you, that there was some ill intent.
Correct,
in it.
Correct. Yeah. And quite frankly, when I was at Naperville, our general orders refused. We couldn't associate with anybody who was on parole.
Yeah.
But what had happened through a series of events, I said, Tim, I said, I can't meet with you. I can't do anything with you. Friday nights, I go to the Bull and Bear Cigar Bar downtown Naperville. I'll be there. Tim shows up. We talked for 4.5 hours.
What'd you talk about, Tim? What'd you want to talk to him about?
I wanted to know what he was doing. And after our 4 or 4.5 hour conversation, he said, you're the missing link. I need you, but I'm going to vet you as much as possible. And I found out after the fact, after he retired, you know, he staked out my house for 6 months. Pulled over everyone that left my house.
To see if there was any drugs involved.
And it was people that I was sponsoring or helping.
You had recovered at this point?
Oh, yeah. I was out of prison and sober. But people were saying, oh, he does this and he gets paid per head. He flew down to Florida and met with the owner of my treatment center and said, I want to see Tim's contract. And I showed it. They showed it to him and said full-time salaried employee, no commission, no bonus. So Rich was able to come back and say, everything they're saying about Tim is a lie. The kid, all he does is help people, and here we are today.
The problem was, is Tim was such a moving force in our community, and some of the other treatment centers in our community were like, oh, my God, what's this guy doing? He must be up to something no good. And people would come to me, how could you work with this guy? He's getting paid heads per beds. He's giving people heroin to get on a plane to go.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
And they're making up all these things. So as a police department, we had to make sure either they were true or not. And then we find out that Tim is responsible for the program the program in Dixon that he did to give
safe
heroin addicts help,
Olympic.
Safe Passages.
So started the second program in the country where an addict could walk into a police station and ask for help.
Yeah, so then what had happened was my bosses were looking at this, and we wanted to start something like that in Naperville, but there was no way we were going to let Tim Ryan into our family until he was investigated.
Yeah.
So it was incumbent upon me, if I was going to work with him, I had to make sure that he was always doing the right thing. And he always was. There was never any negativity there.
It just seemed too good to be true because they made it seem too good
well,
to be true.
Yeah, well, fast forward to now, my full-time job, I'm with Transformations Treatment Center out of Delray Beach, Florida. And one of the specific programs we have is a first responders program and a veterans program. And Rich consults with our treatment center, helping law enforcement professionals put their hand up and ask for help.
So what we do is when I went down, Tim invited me and they said, what do they want with me? I'm a cyber guy. So I toured the facility. It was amazing. Then in the afternoon, they say, we want you to sit in our first responder program. And I'm like, what's that? And they said, we have a specific program for police officers, firefighters, dispatchers, military, probation, that we show them how to ask. When they ask for help, we help them. We have it's four first responders done by first responders. They live separately. It's a separate wing in the transformations place. And I was like, sign me up. I want this.
There have been too many suicides within the police force.
Absolutely.
Way too many.
Yes.
First responders, I'm not giving anyone an excuse to take drugs to escape, but they see way worse things than we do.
It's trauma.
Does that correlate?
Day in and day out. But then there's also that badge of honor. I'm a cop. I'm a fireman. I can't ask for help. And it might not even be alcohol or drugs. It could be mental health. It could be depression. Their marriage could be falling apart because of what they're bringing home. You see a car accident and a dead baby or your partner gets shot. These are traumatic events, but what do? We start self-medicating. And the ego and the pride, and you can't put your hand up and ask for help. No, we need to be helping our brothers in blue. And
we have to stop that stigma.
Yeah.
It's okay to ask for help, regardless of who you are.
Absolutely. So when I was sitting in the first responder session, there was about 15 people in it. 10 of them were police officers. And they're talking about their trauma, and they're talking about this and that. And after the fact, I asked Carlos Farina, who is the therapist who takes care of the first responders. He is an Army veteran. He is a 30-year officer of Broward County, and he's an addiction medicine specialist. So I asked Carlos, I said, out of those 10 police officers that were there in the session talking about their trauma, how many of them have lost their jobs?
Mm-hmm.
He said 90% of them.
Mm.
I said 90% of them? We're a protected class. We with FOP, EAP, FMLA, we're protected. He laughed at me. He goes, Rich, they don't get in trouble for their addiction. They don't get in trouble for the stupid stuff they do on shift because of their addiction. They get in trouble for lying to command staff about their addiction. Because you can't troll, and once you lie, you can't trust you.
Horrible. Horrible. We'll continue this conversation in just a few minutes. If you want to jump in with any questions or comments, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we are talking with Tim Ryan today, National Outreach Director at Transformations Treatment Center. He's the founder and executive director at A Man in Recovery Foundation, AMIRF.org. Is that the best place to send people?
Bingo. AMIRF.org. Yeah. Or you can call A Man in Recovery Foundation at 844-611-4673. Or Transformations Treatment Center at 888-677-1646. And if you have an adolescent in the Chicago or nationwide area up to 18 struggling with addiction, I use Rosecrans Treatment Center. They're one of the best. If you have an adolescent struggling and you need help, you can reach out to Matt Quinn directly at Rosecrans. And I just lost his number, but I'm going to find it.
You have information for Detective Rich Wystocki. Am I saying that right?
Wystocki, yeah.
Wystocki, who, if maybe there are some first responders listening that may need help, they can contact you, get your info.
They can call the Transformations Admission Line directly at 888-677-1646. And if you have an adolescent, call Matt Quinn at 815-708-1646. 1794.
Rich, you were telling Wendy and me off air that the key to parents knowing if their kids are involved in this at all is right there on their telephones, huh?
Absolutely. So this is how kids will order weed and whatever else drug they're doing. They will talk about it. They'll take videos themselves doing it. And parents just need to know that if the key to finding out if their kids are doing drugs is twofold: looking in their technology and drug testing in the home.
So some people would say, but that's a violation of your child's rights. You can't let them.
It's the difference between keeping them alive.
Here's what I tell parents all over the country. There is no such thing as privacy for children, because you are responsible for their technology. I don't care if they babysit all winter, cut grass all summer, and they buy their own iPhone 10. They still don't own it. The parents allow them to have it.
Yeah.
And those are the rules.
Yeah.
My kids talk to me pretty openly. If they stop talking to me, is that a sign? I also every once in a while go, let me see your phone for a minute. I want to look something up. If they get, they always surrender it.
Yeah, sure. The thing that parents have to watch out for, there's something called vaults. There's vaults in Snapchat. There's vaults in apps. And this is where they hide all their pictures and videos of whatever they're doing. And parents need to know how to manipulate that and how to look into that.
How do you find out those things?
Well, if you Google Naperville Police Internet Safety, my TEDx and my parent presentation is on there.
Yeah.
And they can actually see what the vaults are and how to get in there. For example, in Snapchat, there's something called My Eyes Only. And this is where kids will keep all their pictures and videos that they don't want their parents to see.
It's scary, and you know, you can...
I'm taking their phones away.
You can reach out to me. Well, the thing is, parents, if your kids aren't letting you look at the phone, there's something going on. Your kids shouldn't have passwords. If you're the parent, you better know that password.
Or the swipe code.
And the swipe code. And look at their friends. Look at their Instagram. If their friends are smoking bongs or snorting lines, chances are your kids are. And if you think something's going on, drug test them. If they refuse, it's an automatic dirty. If they're smoking weed, do they need inpatient residential? I don't know. Call Matt Quinn. He's also a clinician. So that's... I also just connect the dots on where to get people and where to guide them for help. People don't know what to do.
Right, right, right.
That's a travesty. And in the past week, two of my son Nick's friends have passed away. I think this is the 22nd kid that my son knew. Nick passed away 4.5 years ago that's died.
I follow you on Facebook, and my heart breaks pretty regularly because there's always another one gone.
Constantly.
And you're the one trying to help everybody, you can't do it for them.
No, I had a gentleman message me out of Tampa, Florida 2 days ago and said, can you come down and do an intervention? I said, I can't make it there yet. Let me make some calls. I'll find someone that can come do it. 4 hours later, he texted me. He said, don't bother. The kid's dead.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how
horrible.
And one of the biggest tools that you can give a parent, actually give a kid, is drug testing in the home.
Yeah.
When you drug test your kids, it's like truth serum, because moms have this maternal instinct. Something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong. And we show parents that you need to pay attention to that because something's wrong. So when you drug test your kids in the home, it gives them a huge tool.
Yeah.
When they go to parties with friends, say, hey, dude, you got to try something. I can't. My parents drug test me. Bam. That is a tool that
a good deterrent in a way.
Their kids.
And for families that have someone struggling, we run family support groups. Thursday nights, we run one in Naperville at Wheatland Salem Church, 1852 95th Street at 7 p.m. Tuesday nights, we run one in New Lenox, Illinois at Peace Lutheran Church, 1900 East Lincoln Highway at 7 p.m. The family members come. The person struggling with addiction comes. This is a family disease, so we bring everyone together and we meet people where they're at.
How do you get a kid there that's suffering or that's addicted? You know, unless they want help, they're probably going to put up a big fight.
Not necessarily. You know, nobody wants to be an addict. And when they can be around another kid, and I tell them, I don't care, come high, come on methadone, Suboxone, come on Xanax. We're just here to talk. But when they see Rich, hypothetically, who 5 years ago was a heroin addict, now he's sober, well, I want what he has. How did you do it? And we just kind of guide and direct and wait for them to put their hand up.
Clear something up for us. There's a lot of talk about marijuana being legalized here in Illinois. It's already been legalized in many other states. Does this make the situation better or worse?
Gonna be
safer
a
or not? It's going to be a
catastrophe.
If you would ask the governor of Colorado then if he would sign that bill now, he would say absolutely not.
Because
why?
It has strained their economy like you would not believe, because the federal government has not opened up the banks to accept those funds. Now, I have a friend that I was training in Montana who was a commander of the SWAT teams in Littleton, Colorado, and all these other school shooters. And I said, what are you guys doing all that money from the sales of weed? He goes, what money? He goes, the only people that are making the money are my SWAT guys. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, there are buildings and trailers filled with cash because they can't put it in a bank.
Well, on top of that, the rate with driving and people under
fatalities.
The influence has went up. The black market for weed has went
How
up.
How does the black market go up
because
if it's
legalized?
Because
they tax it too high. And that's one of the big variables. If you tax weed too high because they want to make all this money on it, it's going to drive the black market for it as well. And the problem, I totally support medical marijuana.
Absolutely.
We absolutely need it 100%. But it's going to open Pandora's box. I mean, I see the struggles with my son Tanner with what he's went through with smoking weed. And this isn't the weed I grew up smoking 30 years ago. And the car accidents, the driving under the influence.
The truancies.
The truancy, yeah. The homelessness. And then it fuels other crimes.
We are almost out of time. Barbara, we don't have time to get to your call, but marijuana, gateway drug or no?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Alcohol, gateway 100%, drug or no?
100%. 100%. Yeah.
So they're both.
One, absolutely. You know, why does a 16-year-old kid need to smoke weed? Well, I'm depressed. I'm this. Well, smoking weed's a depressant. You're going to get more depressed. And this weed's so powerful. These kids, their inhibitions are dropped. They're at a party, had a beer or two. Then somebody offers them a Xanax bar, an Oxycontin, a line of heroin. Then they try it. Then they're hooked. They would have never done it if they weren't smoking the weed in the first place.
Where is the fear? I wouldn't have ever just grabbed a pill that someone gave me because what does it do?
You got to understand, this weed today is 30 to 40 to 50% more potent than it was, especially if they're smoking wax or smoking dabs. And there's a lot of kids having psychotic breaks. Look at the ERs in Colorado and stuff for these kids going in having full psychotic breaks.
Dr. John Duffy was in speaking about that. It's different. That happens now frequently. It didn't happen before.
All the time.
And our next epidemic is juuling and vaping in our schools. Junior highs, it's a catastrophe. And now with the advent of being able to put CBD oil in these vaping machines, except for Juul because it doesn't heat up, vaping is becoming an unbelievable way that our kids are getting high right in front of their teachers.
And you can't even smell it.
Yeah.
I don't know what comes next, but if people are listening and they need help, first of all, ask for it. Don't be ashamed. There's no reason to be ashamed. How can people reach out to you, Tim, and get a hold of Detective Wistocki?
888-677-1646 is Transformations Treatment Center, or 844-611-4673 is the Manna Recovery Foundation.
And if any law enforcement officers would like us to do any type of training in their in-service training or reaching out for help, you can reach me at besureconsulting.com, B-E-S-U-R-E consulting.com. We have a 13-minute roll call training that we can show all of your people, and we want to show you how to raise your hand and ask for help, and it's all confidential.
TimRyanSpeaks.com.
Tim, thank you for
being
here.
Bless you guys.
Really appreciate it.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All happening here, 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, WGN Radio. And more news. Saw the headline, government shutdown lays out the welcome mat for hackers, according to security experts. And we have a security expert that we speak to very frequently. He's the ethical hacker Jason Glassberg, co-founder of Kasaba Security. Should we be worried with this shutdown that we're going to get hacked?
Jason's
been hello.
There he is. Jason, hi.
Should we be worried?
Technology was doing me wrong.
We
if only we
you.
Knew somebody.
So the government shutdown,
hacked.
Does that affect us? Should we be worried about more hacking happening?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, it's ironic that we talk about security and the, you know, the basis of this shutdown being security of our southern border. And yet what we're doing is we're basically opening the doors for our electronic border all throughout the government. You know, the fact of the matter is that while the, you know, Department of Defense is fully funded through this shutdown, the Department of Justice is not. And all of the government organs that are tasked with protecting our, you know, IT resources all fall underneath the Department of Justice. So right now they're operating on an absolute skeleton staff and trying to protect the thousands and thousands of systems that the government has.
So, Jason, walk us through this. What would happen next? If you were looking at somebody who wanted to hack, what goes on now that the defenses are less than they were?
Well, you know, the biggest problem we've got is that there's a whole monitoring function. So generally speaking, when you're in charge of these larger networks, whether you're government or private sector, you're constantly looking for abnormal behavior, for people looking to set off alarms when they've accessed parts of the system that they haven't, or people using accounts, for example, that might have been turned off and all of a sudden they're active. Right now, with the lack of staff, there's no one doing that kind of active monitoring. And if they are, they're probably doing it at a rate that's, you know, 10 to 20% of the efficiency that they would normally do it, because there's just not people sharing the load. So essentially, you've got the hen house not being watched and not really being guarded in a timely fashion.
How frightening is this?
I know, Bill.
You know, the whole reason for the shutdown, I mean, I don't have to explain this to you, was for this sort of, to prevent this sort of thing, worries of overseas concerns coming over and doing us harm, when in reality it's making the situation worse, not better, huh?
Well, that's just it. You know, everything has an unintended consequence. And, you know, while we can all talk about the relative benefits of the government programs doing this and the relative benefits of the government doing that, there are certain core functions of the government that are incredibly important. And obviously, this kind of cybersecurity protection is one of them. And I guess an interesting take home from this is that, you know, perhaps the whole cybersecurity infrastructure shouldn't be funded by a Department of Justice and really should be thought of more of as a Department of Defense, which always seems to find funding during these kinds of fiscal emergencies.
So why isn't it that way? That makes sense. Why isn't it that way?
You know, I don't know. I think the evolution of the problem of cyber attack is only recently, you know, coming to light in terms of the seriousness of it.
Yeah.
And in terms of government effect, you know, at first no one even thought about it. And then it was just kind of a nuisance against your credit card. But now, you know, there is an entire critical infrastructure, things like dams and nuclear facilities and all these things that are directly related and all interconnected. And, I personally believe it should be held as part of the highest, you know, government agencies.
You know, you talk about these hackers coming up with newer viruses. Why aren't the people fighting the hackers coming up with new ways to fight hackers?
Oh, they always are, you know, and that's the, when we talk, and, you know, we talk quite frequently, we always talk about updating your browser and updating your antivirus and updating your operating system, and that's the very reason why. It's the ultimate game of whack-a-mole, where, you know, they find, the bad guys find a flaw, the good guys find software to correct it, and you need to update it, right? It won't happen magically, and there always requires a certain input from the user to be able to keep their operating systems and the applications they run up to date to prevent these new kinds of attacks as they're exposed.
The Tribune Company has, they sent out a video that we are all supposed to watch about IT security, and a lot of it does rely on us. We have to be careful, don't download things from a source we don't know, but I know that Apple actually sent out, well, Apple didn't, but somebody used Apple's logo and everything about getting information. I got to tell you, some of these are getting so good, I might even be caught by them.
Well, absolutely. You know, there's an old expression that, you know, a system is as strong as its weakest link. And inevitably, it always turns out that the human aspect of all of these computer hacks winds up being the problem. And inevitably, someone has clicked on something they shouldn't have clicked on. They've opened up some file they shouldn't have opened. And it's a constant struggle. As someone who manages these systems, as well as users who use them, there's a frustration because there's so much automation and ease of use in our business day-to-day requires us being able to download files and being able to go to websites. And at the same time, these are the very same things that are causing trouble. So, you know, people just need to be aware and very attuned into what they should be clicking on and what they shouldn't be clicking on. And first and foremost is the idea that someone would ever ask for financial information or your credentials, your username or password, with an email or on a website, you know, and that should be the number one warning sign that says, hey, I really need to talk to someone on the phone before I hand over this information.
And people are cool with that. I got a call. I was late with a credit card bill, and they called, and they had all my information. They said, you know, is this you? Is this, you know, we have, you know, your address as such. We have a card linked to this account, and they gave me the last four digits. And I said, you know what? I'm uncomfortable giving you this information, so I will call the store directly. And they're like, fine.
Oh,
and they gave me the toll-free number.
That's
so
excellent.
If it's a legit person, they're cool with you calling back yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The number one recommendation is to always make the phone call, right? Because even, you know, there'll always be a phone number listed, and that's the best way to, you know, find out if it's legitimate or not.
Jason Glassberg's our guest. He's the ethical hacker. He's the co-founder of Casabo Security, the Twitter account there, at Casabo Security. We'll take a quick break, and then more of us, Bill and Wendy. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Jason Glassberg, the ethical hacker, co-founder of Casabo Security. This isn't fair to throw at you because I don't even know if you're up on this. I just saw this story this morning about a leak over at the FBI, a very big leak. Do you know anything about this?
No, I don't. I don't know about that one.
They say that the FBI records, emails, Social Security numbers have all been exposed in a massive data leak, according to security experts. This is out of Oklahoma Securities Commission in Oklahoma. It just broke about an hour or so ago, so if you don't know about it, I imagine it's going to be a big story as the day progresses.
Yeah, no, I wonder, there was another big story that broke earlier where the largest cache of usernames, passwords, and email accounts was just discovered on a dark website where, you know, we're talking hundreds of millions of passwords were all in one conglomeration. So I wonder if it may be part of that leak.
So when something like this happens, Jason, what happens normally, if I'm correct, is they then sell this data. There's people who become aware that this is up for auction or up for sale, and they bid on it, and they buy it, and they use it for whatever nefarious means they want, huh?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it becomes bundled up into parcels of usernames and passwords, and they're sold, you know, for every hundred, for every thousand. And basically they're used to create, for the most part, they're used to create online replicas of your personality for inevitably some kind of fraud. In the case of government passwords, though, it becomes a little bit more serious because this is information that perhaps we don't want other foreign entities or governments to know about.
You have to think,
anytime there's a government release, it becomes a bit more serious.
You would imagine if the FBI can be hacked, anybody can be hacked, right?
Well, you know, and that's just it. And that's really kind of the whole thought pattern that companies and people need to do. It's this concept of assume breach, right? Assume that whatever you're putting online can be gotten to by bad guys. And what protections are you going to be put in place to make sure that even though they've gotten through your first line of defense, you know, how can you prevent them from getting further within the system?
Right.
All right. Jason Glassberg is on the line with us. You can find out. He is co-founder of Casabo Security. You can go to casabo.com. All right. Jason, you mentioned passwords, and I have been battling password issues forever. I try to keep them different on every account I have. I always forget my password and have to click on the forgot password, and a lot of places will not let you reuse ones you've used in the past. Is there a free app or something? I know there are several out there, like a password generator, a password keeper. And question number two, what if that site gets hacked? Then they're into everything we have.
Well, two questions, two answers. Yes, there are a number of password generating applications that, you know, things like one that comes to mind is FirstPass, which allows you to automatically generate a password, a random password for each site, and then keeps it in their system, and then when you need it, it will automatically populate. But then there's also other free systems, you know, for example, Google Chrome, the web browser, will perform that service for you also, and it allows you to store and encrypt password in your web browser, which then, you know, repopulates, and you never use the same password twice. So that's a terrifically good idea. And it's always recommended, you know, one of the reasons why people want to go and get these hacked passwords and credentials is because many times people reuse the same password for their email, for their banking, for their PayPal or their, you know, Amazon or eBay. And so once they've got one set of credentials, it's opened up the door to all these other services. So using different passwords for different services is a very good idea. And it's true if the password service themselves get hacked, you potentially do have an issue. What a lot of those services do, though, is that they require what we would call a two-factor authentication. So not only do you need to know the password to the password service, but you need some way of secondarily confirming your identity. And a lot of times that's done through an SMS message on your phone where they come over and give you a code. So in order to truly break into that system, you would need to know the password that you use online, as well as be in possession of your cell phone.
Jason,
and the odds of that are kind of small.
Yeah.
Oh. If you buy stuff online, a lot of places, once you give them your information, your credit card information, your address, your phone number, and stuff like that, it'll give you the option for them to save that information so the next time you buy, it's easier, it's already on file. Do we want to do that, though? Do we want to trust them to keep our information on their website?
That is entirely a personal choice.
It's way easier.
I don't do that. Right. You know, and here at the end of the day, right, everything is a trade-off, right? Convenience and security always seem to work on the exact opposite end of the spectrum.
Right.
So generally speaking, the more things are convenient, the less secure they are. And the opposite's always true. The more secure it is. So it's entirely reasonable to assume that it would be a lot easier to do your online shopping and have them remember the credit card than you just click a button and you're good to go. But at the same time, if for some reason they don't have proper security on their back-end system storing the stuff and they get hacked themselves, then your card's exposed. So it's really up to the individual's choice. How much risk are they willing to take on for the sake of convenience?
And what did you recommend? And I know this isn't really coming from you, but there are some free ones out there if you Google it. But then, you know, see what? Actually, Jason, I'm Googling free password managers, and then things come up. And how do I even know they're legit?
Well, what I would do is that's a good question. It's like the catch-22 of everything online. Fortunately, there's a lot of information, and there's a lot of reliable technical news sites out there. Things like CNET,
that's a good place.
General technical news. And what you do is you have to do a little research, right? Again, nothing comes for free. So you do a little background research, you look these things up, you see which ones have the highest rankings. The internet is terrific in that regard, is that everyone's got a free voice. And so, you know, if something appears to be enormously popular and is represented on these legitimate websites, it's probably a safe bet.
All right. Well, that's good advice. I'm going to CNET.com and I'm going to look, because I forget my passwords on everything.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this is a catch-22 also, because if you put it in your phone, like in the notes or something, and somebody finds your phone, you're done. All your passwords.
Yeah.
No, exactly. The password managers are terrific, and I would always recommend using one. And just, you need to find one that works with your kind of online style. There are enough of them that you should find one that's convenient and should work for you.
All right. And some of them you have to pay for. CNET is recommending Keeper. So go to CNET.com,
yep.
And that goes up to $25.49 per year, which when you think about is nothing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for all your help. Just more stuff to worry about. I'm just going to unplug the computer and let it cool down.
It's probably for the best, Wendy.
Well, It's always a pleasure talking to you guys.
Jason,
thank you.
Thanks so much. Have a great rest of the week. It's Jason Glassberg, co-founder of Cassava Security. He's the ethical hacker.
I'd like my hacker to be ethical,
yeah,
wouldn't you?
Everybody does. All right, we'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then our friend Dean Richards tells us about what movies to see and which to avoid. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys.
That's who he is. Hi, Dean.
Singable song in America.
The what song in America?
It's the most singable song.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I defy you not to sing along with that every week. I dare you.
They teach kids in first grade that song now.
That's right.
The first thing they teach them.
Right.
Dean, I have to tell you, both Wendy and I are members of the Screen Actors Guild, of the SAG.
Ooh.
And because of that, we're sent movies this time of year, discs with number one top-rated movies.
That's right.
For us
that
to
we
consider
destroyed.
That we're, well, that's what I was going to say. It tells us when we watch these, we put them in our DVD players, and it says we have to sign an agreement saying that when we're done, we're not going to lend it to anybody. We're not going to watch it more than once.
Destroy it.
Destroy it. What
like
percentage?
Mission Impossible.
Right. Like
da-da-da.
Mr. Phelps.
Da-da-da.
Just like Mr. Phelps.
This movie will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
What percentage of people do you think actually do that and ruin the DVD? They break it and they throw it away.
I have done extensive research on this because I wondered myself, and the answer to that is
0%. 0%. Nobody does that.
Nobody does that.
And they know that,
don't
they?
I blew mine up with an M80.
You
when
did?
I was finished.
Wow. Did
yes.
you? Wow. Be careful.
I clicked agree. I had
You'll
to do it.
You'll lose a finger or something. Be careful.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, we're all going to get arrested by the FBI, and you're not.
Yeah. So then you have that going
I'll come
for
visit you.
It is nice, though, that for a while, for the months of December and January, we've got this pile of what should be the year's best movies. That's really good to catch up on them
right.
in a couple weeks' time. I love that.
Yeah, sorry, listeners.
Right, I know, it's
sorry
not fair.
Sorry you can't be in our elite club.
It's not fair, is it?
Sorry, I have sorry we get to enjoy this perk and you don't.
Right, it's not fair. Last night, I watched with my wife the movie The Wife, which I did not expect to like, and I ended up liking it quite a bit.
It's quite a good, really good movie.
Is it? I don't even know if
you know who's in it, Wendy?
That.
Somebody you mentioned the other day saying, what happened to Christian Slater?
Oh,
there's
I
Christian
love
Slater.
Him. Right? All right, I'll watch
He's
it.
Very good in it.
Glenn Close, the long-suffering wife of an author who becomes a Pulitzer Prize winner, and she's, you know, sort of put up with his ego and bravado her entire life, and now that he's won the Pulitzer, it's even worse, and a few things are disclosed in the movie, and there are some surprises along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But Glenn Close's performance is so good.
She's very good.
And I'm surprised that Bill liked it so much, because Kevin Hart plays her husband.
Right.
In this movie.
Yeah, he's wacky in it.
It's a real turn for him.
I believed you for a minute. I am so gullible.
It's a real dramatic tour de force, if you will.
He's becoming the new Sir Richard Attenborough.
Yes, he's the new... He's the new Lawrence Oliver.
Yes.
Sir Kevin Hart.
Yes, Sir Kevin Hart. Don't be shocked when he's knighted.
That's when Bill will take the sword from his shoulders and plunge it into his chest. That's
in his own chest.
Did you see this? He's friends. Kevin Hart is friends with
everyone but you.
With everybody but me, yes. But he's friends with Terry Crews, the actor Terry Crews. And Terry Crews said, he's my friend, but I have to be honest, he has handled the situation with the Academy Awards and everything completely wrong. Did you see any of this, Dean?
I didn't see Terry Crews talking about it, but he's completely right. I like Kevin Hart quite a bit. I've interviewed him for many years. We have a very nice relationship, and I agree with him. I think that he handled this whole thing very poorly.
He says Kevin is playing the victim, when in reality he is the opposite of the victim. He's the one that stirred this whole thing up, and he's right.
Yeah. Well, that's 100% true, and it all could have been avoided. I mean, you know, Kevin tweeted some things and said some things in his act years ago that it's not that some people perceive it as homophobic. They were homophobic, the things that he said. He encouraged violence against his own son if he turned out to be gay.
Right. Horrible.
Horrible. And it, you know, it's just easy to say that you know, the things that Ellen DeGeneres said and others trying to defend him have said, that he's a different person now and that he apologizes, but he decided to take this "I'm the victim" route.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of you know,
he did do
we
that.
All say things in the past that, you know, for which we're sorry. You know, eventually he finally said it, but in the beginning he you know, completely bungled up this whole thing. So, you know, who,
it would have gone away, don't you think, if he would have just said, you know what, that was stupid.
Right.
I am so sorry. I didn't mean it. I was trying to be funny. Hey, yeah. I apologize. Boom. Right. It's over.
Boom.
So, Dean, the Academy now says that the award show, the Academy Awards presentation, will go without a host. But in that very beginning, when you very first open the show, somebody's got to walk out and address the crowd and have a monologue, don't you think? What's going to happen?
Awesome lady announcer that I love. Who does this? I don't know her name, but she's, and now presenting. I love her voice.
She's a fantastic voiceover announcer. I don't know her name.
I love her.
Wendy says she should host, Dean. What do you think?
Well, no, she can just go get, and now for the first award.
Just get right to it. No messing around.
You open the show. I mean, maybe they have some kind of tape piece or something, you know, a tribute to who knows what.
Yeah.
To start things off.
Yeah.
And now here's Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep. And they walk out and, you know, they give the first awards.
So no monologue, no making fun of everybody who's there, none of that?
Yeah. Boom, we've just saved 15 minutes.
But those are that's normally my favorite 15 minutes. Isn't it normally yours?
Depends on who does it.
Yeah, who it is.
Yeah.
And it's not Kevin Hart, so.
Right, that's true.
That's good news for you.
I'm going to be watching some Kevin Hart videos for 15 minutes that night to fill the void in my life.
Well, that'll make the time fly by.
If you'd like to come by, Bill. I'm ordering pizza.
All right.
We can have fun.
Count me in. Yeah, I can't wait. Fun. That's going to be great. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more with Dean Richards. Stick around. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, the new year means new resolutions. One of my resolutions to brush longer, and it's all going to work because of Quip. And twice every day. It's your oral health with a Quip electric toothbrush. It helps you stick to good habits, and it makes it very simple.
The guiding features are like a built-in support system for better brushing, sensitive sonic vibrations for an effective clean that is gentle on your sensitive gums. People brush way, way, way too hard, and some electric toothbrushes are just too abrasive.
And this has that built-in two-minute timer to help me keep my New Year's resolution. It pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides or go top and bottom, and it'll help you clean your whole entire mouth evenly.
Did you know that up to 90% of us don't brush for a full 2 minutes or don't clean evenly? That's true. We love our Quips, no doubt about it. Over a million happy, healthy mouths do too. Quip starts at just $25. If you go to getquip.com right now, getquip.com/Bill and Wendy, you can get your first refill pack for absolutely nothing, for free. That's your first refill pack for free at getquip.com. I'll spell it out for you, getquip.com/Bill and Wendy.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Wendy. We're talking to Dean Richards, Wendy. You know Dean from the WGN-TV Morning News, where he plays the role of Dean.
I'm head bobbing.
Are you right now?
I'm rock head bobbing.
Be careful.
Right now.
You'll throw your neck out, Dean. Be very careful. Dean, Betty White is 97 years old today.
How about that?
God bless her.
Born in Oak Park back in 1922 on this day.
Yes.
And lived here in the Chicago area for about 4 or 5 years, she told me.
Yeah.
And her family moved to California, where she's lived since then. She is still active, still gets around. She's frail, a little more frail now, and, you know, requires somebody to help her to walk around. But she's doing, you know, pretty well for 97.
You know what she has in common with Wendy?
Hmm.
They have both, quote unquote, spent time with Alan Ludden.
Really?
Yep. Yep.
Just on Wendy. Television. I mean, great just tell. Watching him.
Yep.
The password is Wendy Stein.
Don't you think, though, that she is inspirational to so many of us who say to ourselves, oh, I wonder what life would be like. Will I still be able to work and talk and have a sense of humor when I'm 90? And she does.
Yes, absolutely. She's, active and busy and curious and irreverent She's everything I'm going to want to be when I'm 97. I'll tell you what, my mom, who's just turned 96 the other day.
Yes, oh, happy birthday.
Thank you, thank you. But my mom looks to Betty White for inspiration. When she's feeling, you know, a little tired or, you know, whatever. You know, my mom loves the Golden Girls. That's her whole life.
Does she? Yeah.
Honestly. You know, she occasionally visits with her family and will talk to her children. Most of the time, she spends it with the Golden Girls.
Oh, that's perfect.
She loves it.
That's excellent.
And she loves loves Betty White. And she says, you know what? I see Betty White out and doing things, and if Betty White can do it, so can I.
Oh, see? So, inspirational all the way through.
Yeah, absolutely.
People forget she was not on the first few seasons of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. They added her later on, and it was dangerous messing with the chemistry of that that cast, but she fit in perfectly.
You have one of the most successful television sitcoms, even, you know, even back in the day, even before it became legendary like it is now. But, you know, it was an extremely successful sitcom. Do you mess with it? Do you start adding characters? Do you start putting people into it?
Yep.
So it was very risky when they added Sue Ann Nivens, the happy homemaker,
mm-hmm.
who did a cooking show just right down the hall from Ted Baxter and the news and all the antics of the newsroom there. But, you know, she was the suggestive and naughty, happy homemaker.
Do you remember the episode, Dean, where she was depressed and didn't come into work? So everybody from Mary's station went to visit her at her house, and they cut to her bedroom, and it had a huge vibrating bed. And then there was a joke where she could look up and fix her hair by looking at a mirror in the ceiling. It was fantastic.
Lou Grant, trying to be, you know, sympathetic to her because she wasn't feeling well, sits on the edge of her bed, and the bed starts vibrating. And she gets this devilish look on her face. That's such a good show. That's so funny.
Boy, is that funny.
Such a funny show, even still.
All right, let's talk about the movies that come out. Not a whole lot coming out this week.
Just one.
One.
And it's awful.
Oh, no, yeah. Is it?
So it's a good week to catch up on your Oscar movies. Which Oscar movies do you still need to see, you two? I know you're busy with your complimentary.
The Melissa McCarthy one.
Haven't seen that yet. Bohemian Rhapsody is still waiting. I got to see that.
I didn't get that.
Oh, you didn't?
Oh, that's the only one I wanted, and I didn't get that. My mailman stole it.
It's possible.
Wow.
He's a big Queen. Your mailman's a huge Queen
fan.
Who
isn't?
If you call Alan Ludden's house, I think they have an extra copy there.
Damn.
They owe you. Wendy, they owe you.
Do you know there was one movie I got one year, a screener. God, I can't remember which one it was. And I got the case and the whole story about it. Oh, and when I went to take the there was no disc in there. No.
Yeah,
that's not fair.
That's very disappointing.
That's not fair.
Here's what you need to see, because the next big award show is going to be the Screen Actors Guild. It's a week from Sunday.
Right. So I better start watching. I want to vote.
And then the Academy Award nominations are going to come out next week on the 22nd. The Oscars aren't until February 24th, so we have a little time for that.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to see Green Book. I mean, these are the movies that are going to be up for
great
convention.
Book. Great movie.
Melissa McCarthy's really movie is okay, but it's really not winning anything, and I don't think it's going to be up for contention. Bohemian Rhapsody, you need to see. How about Roma? Have either of you seen Roma?
And I want to see it. Wendy's wincing. She doesn't want to see Roma. She used to work with Roma.
No, I loved that Roma.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
It's about her.
No, if it was, I'd watch it.
It's not?
What's the put off there, Wendy? Black and white? Foreign
language? No, foreign language probably. Yeah.
Really? I love foreign language movies.
You are very different than I am.
I love them. So see that one, and what else, Dean? Is there another one or two?
That very well could win Best Picture.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah. Everybody's saying that.
Star is Born, I think you've both seen Star is
Born.
Saw
it.
Love it.
Yep.
Although I didn't love it as much as I thought I was going to love it. It didn't move me.
I think the hype machine has taken over on this.
Oh, maybe.
That the hype is so big that people are coming back going, yeah, I liked it, I didn't love it.
Yeah.
Which is okay. I happen to, I picked it as my best movie.
Best of the year.
I did like it very much. But I think those are the ones that are going to be in play. If Beale Street Could Talk.
I want to see that.
That looks
really good.
That's going to be another contender for some major awards.
Could have been a contender.
From Beale Street.
Yeah. So, you know, those are the ones, because we have one awful movie that I'll tell you about in a second.
All right.
That's the only one that's opening this week. This is a great movie, a great weekend to go see some of the Oscar movies that are out. How are you on M. Night Shyamalan films?
I like
most of his work. Sometimes he doesn't quite get it right.
Okay, and I think that this week would be one of those weeks where he doesn't quite get it right with Glass, which is...
Wah, wah.
It's, do you remember his movie Unbreakable?
Yes, yeah, loved it.
That came out like almost 20 years ago.
Yes.
19, 20 years ago.
Yep.
And then he puts out this film with James McAvoy a couple of years ago called Split, which I loved.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Split. And now... He brings the characters from those two movies together in this final film that is called Glass. Bruce Willis is back, Samuel L. Jackson, and James McAvoy. For about three-quarters of the movie, literally, Samuel L. Jackson doesn't say a word, doesn't do anything. He's in a wheelchair. There, it's mostly centered in an institution.
Yeah.
But he sits there and really does nothing and adds absolutely nothing to the film. Until about the last half hour of the movie, pretty much the same with Bruce Willis. His character is underplayed in this movie. Much of it hangs on the shoulders of James McAvoy, which is fine because he plays this character who has multiple personalities, and it's super creepy and fascinating, endlessly fascinating to see him going from character to character.
He says he does 20 characters in
character,
the movie.
He does.
Yeah.
And he does. It's fascinating to watch it. But this story is, it's you know, the story of three damaged people who fancy themselves as superhuman, as superheroes.
Yeah.
And so this movie explores that notion for much of the movie, but takes so long before anything happens. In this movie, I had checked out. I mean, really, I really tried to stay with this.
Sure.
It took about an hour and a half before any action, before anything started happening, other than, you know, thoughtful conversations between doctors and the patients in the bedroom.
Sure.
Really didn't add that much. I found it very, very anticlimactic, very disappointing, especially because Split was so great.
Yeah.
I loved Split, and I remember liking Unbreakable very much as well. And I think this one's kind of a disappointing, you know, part of this trilogy that I only gave a Dean's List D minus.
That's not good at all, Dean.
D minus.
That is not good.
And I want to mention Randy Thomas. She is the woman I mentioned. I'm trying to play it on our computer, but it's not working. 1993, she made history as the first woman ever hired by the Motion Picture Academy as the Oscars live announcer. Oh. I love her voice.
You want more of her.
She does have a
Let's
good
talk
voice.
To her, Randy Thomas.
All right, I'm in. Dean, thank
when
you.
When I die, I would like her to take over Victory Auto Records.
Is that true?
That's my request.
It's 100 years in the future. You know
she
that.
Might be too smooth for that particular commercial.
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Dean's pretty smooth.
What's that supposed to be?
Well,
Dean's
it very means smooth. That you're perfect
Got to have
for
a little
it.
Rough around the edges.
A
to
little
be,
bit, yeah.
To be the...
Well, sure, to match that watch band.
Wow. Wow. Dean, thank you so much. Have a great
Love
weekend.
Love you, Dean.
See you guys.
It's Dean Richards. We'll take a break, and then more show coming up, The Stories That Matter, with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.
All right, join us on the stream. American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men, are bringing us what's hot and what's cold, and we've got what's hot in grocery stores, and you know what it is? They trick us to buy stuff.
They trick us.